Welcome back to the second hour of the Drum and Bass Break on Salto Amsterdam. Like every Sunday, we bring you some nice goodness of drum and bass music and also some nice new guests that we are inviting in our radio show to share their experience of their drum and bass journey. Tonight, we are featuring Spiros, a Greek friend of ours, who is also the man behind the blog and website God Is No Longer a DJ. It's a website and a blog that is documenting Spiros' experience and your views, Spiros, may I say, on the drum and bass scene. It's been 8 years now that you're working on this project. So I'm gonna start with the first question, basic question. How, where, when, why did you end up getting into drum and bass?
That's a long trip down memory lane. I started listening to electronic music. There was no drum bass back then, around 1993, probably. I started, like everyone, with breakbeat music, hardcore, the early suburban bass, Prodigy, Production House. And then I went to a rave, at a party, where LTJ Booking was playing in 1994. And then it was like an epiphany. It was just there and then that I decided that this is the music I'm gonna be listening to. And it's been now 26 years since then, and I'm still hooked.
I do have a question around this reply. So LTJ Bookem, this is what made you really like an epiphany, look at the music that you would like to follow more. What was it that made you actually do this, have this trigger in your mind? Was it the speed of the music? Was it the vibe? Was it the melodies? What was it?
If I have to choose something, yeah, it would be the melody, it would be the flow. They used to call it intelligent. It's a contentious term that everybody is denouncing it.
Yeah.
But for me, it triggered something. I don't know if it was emotional. The whole flow. It was music like I hadn't heard before.
Yeah, that's totally true. I think it's also a good feeling of like losing track of time when you're listening to this music. You just forget time. You know, it's crazy.
I completely agree. In fact, I was in Amsterdam in 2012, I think, for a Logical Progression event. It was an old school event in Melkweg.
I've been there. That was.
I'll probably be there too.
Yeah. Yeah. We probably all were there.
It was LTJ Bookem, Fabio, James A from Easy Rollers, and DJ Marky. Yeah. I think that was the lineup. So. It was an old school event. Nice. And. It was a great experience because it brought back some very fond memories. Because the blog is not only old school oriented. I have an affinity for the formative years of drum and bass, but still I'm listening to drum and bass for 26 years, so I'm keeping in touch with all the new trends. It has evolved through the years, but there are certain memories that live and stay with you forever.
I think Morty is gonna come back to the evolution part of your trip in the drum and bass scene. What I would like to ask at this point is, indeed, how did you start? What made you basically start the project? We're talking about your website, God Is No Longer a DJ. What made you start the project, start documenting and wanting to share your experience and your experiences in the drum and bass scene through this website?
Well, let's start with the name of the blog. It seemed like a good idea at the time. Obviously, it's a wordplay of a Faithless song.
Of course.
Well, it seemed like a good idea at the time. I deeply regret it now, but it's too late to change it. And it's so cheesy that it's memorable. Mm-hmm. So everybody can remember that.
Yeah.
So I decided to keep it.
And that was a good choice, I think.
Yeah.
So what was the drive?
Well, as I told you, I always had this vague idea of keeping a musical diary.
Yeah.
It's like a photo album, but in writing. I try to capture, you know, moments, memories, or even views, and then share them with like-minded people. And I started very, very timidly. I didn't have a clear idea of, you know, what the vision was, where I was trying to go to.
Just
it kind of shaped through time. Through time, I had a very valuable support from friends, and then from artists that were guests on my blog that actually supported and helped me and were very encouraging. I can't deny that I haven't thought about folding it from time to time. You know, it can be almost an obsession because English is not my first language, obviously. So writing a feature, and some of them are very, very long. And, you know, I have to research them. It takes a long time, a lot of energy. Usually working late at night when the kids are asleep or when I'm not working. But it's, you know, a labor of passion. So I'll stop it when it's, you know, become an obsession and a burden. So far it hasn't, so I'll keep going.
That's good.
So how do you decide what to write about? I mean, there's so many experiences and tunes and other stuff you can write about. But how do you pick which topics are good enough for or fitting the vision, let's say?
Well, I have selected certain categories which are like thematics.
Yeah.
And all features revolve around them. There are certain overlaps in some categories. For instance, Whatever Happened to series can mingle with the Tracks I Wish I'd Written series. And the structure is more or less the same, and it changes through time. How I decide the content? Well, to be honest, I keep some notes on my phone, you know, just driving and listening to a track.
Yep.
And think about it. It's a track probably I wish I'd written that my name was on the record sleeve. I try to contact the people involved. Usually they respond and then take it from there. Sometimes they're not interested, so I just move on. Just stream of thoughts, really, during the day. So I keep notes, and when I have the time, I scribble a draft. If it's going somewhere, then I'll go along. If it's not, I move on.
You don't stay too long in a thought, you know, like ideas.
Not really. I have, I don't know, tons of drafts that are buried in my hard drive. And I always say that sometime soon I will revisit them, but, you know, probably I will never know. So trying to keep up to date with new strengths, new music, and it has to do with, you know, what I'm listening at the moment. For instance, if I buy a new record, then I try to find a similar artist or something that, you know, reminds me of the track from back in the day. So this is what triggers the stream of thought.
All right.
I think Trademark had something around it also, but consistency, right, in terms of the...
Yeah, I know. Like when you're blogging, consistency is very essential and like key to attract a bunch of visitors and have established fan group, or so to say. Sorry, I just have to cough for a little bit. I'll cut that out. So for me, I know one thing I'm personally struggling with writing a lot because I haven't done it so much for a couple of years. No, not years, but months. And for me, like being consistent is very hard nowadays because there's a lot of things going on in life. I have a kid and all that. Is this something you're struggling with as well? Like staying consistent when writing, or is
yeah.
it? Yeah.
I completely agree. The consistency is the key. I have tried to keep a one post per month schedule, which in many cases I have achieved that. But as you say, life moves on and there are priorities, life priorities. So for the time being, I'm afraid that the blog is put back for a little in order to keep focus on more important things. But I really struggle sometimes, you know, to keep a certain schedule.
Yeah. So an ebbs and flows, I guess.
Ebbs and flows, yeah. Ebbs and flows.
And what do you think, what sets your approach apart from other blogs who write about drum and bass or other people that are involved with writing about it?
To be honest, I read a lot. I don't know if something sets me apart because my blog is not a magazine. It's a platform for my own views that reflects my own views and taste. So if you're expecting reviews from new music, it's rare to happen. It has happened before, but I'm not doing that. I'm really focused on certain categories and present in the way I would like someone to write them for me. So it demands a bit of research.
Trying to be objective, you mean?
I'm anything but objective, to be honest. I'm very biased. I'm very biased, and you can see that many artists and labels are recurring in the features. So I'm anything but objective.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing that sets you apart from anything else. Yeah. I mean,
well, probably.
That's your
you know,
unique
that,
yeah.
Yeah, my mantra is that the blog is about writing about music I like, written from people I like. So this is a mantra.
Yeah.
And I try to stick to it, but a few exceptions.
Very well. Yeah.
So I think that's a good point where Morty, I interrupted you at the beginning, at the introduction, where you wanted to ask about the evolution and the things that are biting in the ass. So here's
evolution and ass biting. Yes.
Yes.
I was asking you in the first hour that you wrote a lot of content and you had a lot of artists, you know, on your blogs. Did you ever write something or your content that later on in your journey to drum and bass like bite you in the ass? Like things that come back? I would say, okay, I'm not doing it because of whatever you said or...
Well, not really.
All right.
I have, you know, this principle that I don't revisit anything I have written in the past. Because
that's,
you know,
an interesting
be,
one. Interesting.
Because you can be trapped in a loop.
Yeah.
So, never regret.
Always well, I have a few. I have to admit, I have some regrets, but...
we like the scoops in our radio show, so you need to talk about the regrets afterwards.
No, but
I can tell you all about it offline.
Without names, you can also share it online.
I can just photograph, yeah. Well, I have a few regrets, but that's not the point. I think a real question is that... I think you can also admit that listening to drum and bass can be... very rewarding, and everybody has entered certain phases. For instance, I started with breakbeat and hardcore. Then I had a brief stint with happy hardcore, a very brief one. Then I wouldn't listen to anything that there was no amen break in it. Then anything that didn't have at least 1.5 minute of intro with strings and well sounds and wherever. I had various phases. So there are certain parts of the blog that capture those moments. And to be honest, I'm proud of anything, of every phase. Even looking at my record collection, there are records that I remember why, I remember when I bought them. But I can't really tell you why. There are records I have played only once, but I'm not selling them or giving them away because they captured a certain moment.
Yeah.
So there's a reason that they're in the cabinet. So
Nice. I think that's a thing that a lot of people can learn from it, because as humans we like to dwell on things that happened in the past and maybe drag it along too much. So I guess not looking back is a good advice, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Good point.
Well, I don't know if it's good advice, but it works for me.
Well, yeah.
I think it's a good conclusion, actually, also made by Trademark, that indeed we all dwell with the past and we are always projecting into the future. We don't know how to concentrate on the present, and we are consumed by these things that have happened, will happen. And yeah, I think your input is actually food for thought, like Trademark says. And maybe coming to the next question, and focusing and concentrating a little bit more in your content, and we have actually selected a couple of things that we would like to concentrate on. You mentioned it also, tracks I wish I'd written. We love the section. I have a question, high level. Does the title really represent its cause? How did it start? Like, were you really jealous of a track that you would wish to have written?
Of course.
This is how it started?
I think
tell us about that journey.
Self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not a DJ or a record producer, but I have daydreamed about that. So, yeah, every track that is selected, it's carefully selected. It's not random. It's not, clickbaiting. Every track that is selected means a lot to me. It's associated with a beautiful memory, and I wish my name was on the record sleeve. So no, I'm very selective about this section.
That's interesting.
That's also the tracks you've written. You listen to a lot of music. It's now, of course, obviously, you are a big music fan, and the blog, everything. Did you ever try to mix or something? Did you ever bought like a console or players, or did you try it?
To be honest, I've messed around with Raptor a bit, but yeah. I think that ship has sailed for now. So only for, recreational purposes.
Yeah, of course. Do you think you ever will get a setup like a DJ has with two CDs players and a mixer?
As I told you, I think that Sip probably has saved. I should have done it before. Yeah, that's one of my regrets, actually.
No, I don't agree.
Why has the ship sailed? I don't understand. So it's never too late.
Because,
right?
When I had the time, I wasn't really focused. Now that I really don't have the time.
I could be focused, but I cannot do it.
Yeah, it's a matter of priorities, I guess. All
right. Yeah, life priorities. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
So as a conclusion, please correct me if I'm wrong. As a conclusion to your reply, I understand that the tracks you wish you would have written are things that are triggering memories, are probably designed on a way of a sound that you like to receive in your ear and you appreciate. These are the main let's say criteria, more or less.
Well, the main criterion actually is that is a piece of music that means a lot, whether it is a favorite artist or reminds me of a party or the day I bought a record. It's something that is associated with, my relationship with music. I listen to music a lot, mm-hmm. every day, whether I'm driving or I'm going out for a walk, or even when the kids are asleep and I want to go to bed as well. So, I'm selecting these tracks, just looking at the records, and there are certain tracks that actually have the power to convince you to write something about it.
I mean, at the end of the day, music
I have made the social experiment. Mm-hmm. If I post on Facebook a track, just the video link, a YouTube link, and get, well, let's say, a number of views. If I actually write about storing, you know, additional information about the track, it doesn't generate the same interest. And I think it's the minimal attention span nowadays.
Yeah, that's also because, don't you think that it's also how we have evolved as people that get the information, meaning that we have moved more into a reality where, like you just described, when a link is there, it's more accessible. When an article is there, words are there, is becoming less accessible because we need to spend time to actually read it.
But that's actually the conclusion.
A good conclusion.
Yeah, it is.
That's interesting. Also, in terms of the content creation in general. But yeah, thank you for sharing your views and the way you look at it. I want to go to the next category also that I found very interesting. We were talking the other day on the phone, and it's about vinyl. It's about you indicated, and we looked into it, the tracks. What came first, the music or the obsession, and then the other articles that you were writing, which is. Let me see, what was it? I don't have. Oh yeah, the memoirs of a vinyl junkie.
Well, let me start with the latter. The memoirs of the vinyl junkie was the first category I told you in the start.
Yeah.
Semi-autobiographical, as I told you, real names, real dates, real places. Some of the events are a bit twisted. It was an elementary start. That's why I wrapped it up and moved on. Because there were my experiences, I don't know if they were of any interest to anybody else. It was the start of the blog, you know, I was trying to find the purpose and a vision. So I'm not denouncing it, but this is a category that is obsolete now.
Why do you say that it's obsolete? I was just about to ask you, how many vinyl records do you own?
In the area of, I don't know, 1,500, 2,000.
That's quite a lot.
That's a nice selection. So why do you think it's obsolete nowadays? And maybe that makes the link to the next question.
I was talking about the blog category that is obsolete.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. Because I'm you not don't going keep to update it anymore.
Yeah. Okay, I see.
The other category that you asked me about, what came first? Well, that's a paraphrase of Nick Hornby quote. Have you watched the movie High Fidelity?
No, I haven't.
Anyway, it's a quote. The actual quote is, what came first, the music or the misery? Well, he was referring to pop music or rock music, not in electronic, but you can make an analogy. Was I miserable because I was listening to pop music, or was I listening to pop music because I was miserable? So it was a wordplay. So what came first? And I think it was intended to be a six-part category. I've only written the first two. And then, for some reason or another, I just forgot about that, to be honest.
I think
maybe sometime I'll update it.
Exactly, maybe that triggers also the update of some of the content that you had written in the past. Okay, I think a last question from my side in terms of vinyl-related questions, since I'm also a vinyl junkie and I'm somebody who is still playing on vinyl. What do you think of the vinyl industry?
Is there a vinyl industry, actually? I'm not quite sure.
I want to hear
if you are referring to vinyl revival, for instance.
So,
well, the interest hasn't
changed. Just to clarify what I mean with my question is about the label positioning and about the vinyl in the market.
Well, there is an increase or a rekindle of interest in vinyl in the last few years. But I don't know if it is actually an increase. For instance, when we were talking about limited edition
Yeah.
Releases in the 90s. It was in the area of 2,000 to 5,000 copies. Now, I don't know, a bestseller.
It's probably 100.
Let's say 500.
Yeah.
No more than 1,000. No more than 1,000. And I just wonder sometimes if it is financially sustainable for labels to actually keep releasing vinyl.
It
I
is
don't
not. Know if it,
I don't know if the demand is that much.
So it is they, not. Yeah.
So I no, think I think they balance it out with digital releases.
The amount of times trademark, I would love to hear what you think. Only from my experience of talking with label owners, every time I ask them about the vinyl and how sustainable it is economically, financially, they all turned around and told me that it is not. It's something that they decide to just keep as a very limited, because they still like vinyl. So I think it's a bit of a strategy also, and a way a label decides to do things. Like Eat Brain, for example, okay, it's very neurofunk, and they decided to also go digital and stop the vinyl releases about 2 years ago. So it's a matter of decision on the strategy. But Trademark, please, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I think I didn't have anything big to add, but I think you could make a little bit money out of vinyl release, but it's more like a promotional or a marketing tool nowadays. So to make for example for a special release like they did with the LP of Future T on In Perspective Records.
Ways of Funk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's more or less. You can't make a lot of money out of it, maybe possibly break even, but it's more like the after sales from around it, you know what I'm saying about?
And the marketing experience around it.
Yeah, and it could be a tool to lift up the other releases. Channels. Yeah, indeed.
That's an interesting one, because we were talking during a phone call with Spiros about the artwork. And we were actually, that's where I'm getting into. That back in the days, there was so much more effort being put in the vinyl and especially in the artwork, that nowadays you also see this cost effectiveness type of exercise that the labels have to go through, where you see that they still need to produce some samples of vinyl copies, but at the same time, they maybe weigh the cost, and then we're missing out on the artwork. What's your take, Spiros, actually, on this? What do you think?
Well, I love record artwork. I have also presented my favorite drum bass artwork in two features on the blog. To be honest, I would like to share a quote from a guest I had from Dennis Huddleston. He's an ambient artist. And he told me that cannot understand artists that write exquisite music but neglect the visual side of music. It's like having a Rembrandt and stuffing it in an IKEA frame, which is a quote I really love, and always with every chance I repeat it. I love artwork, and I love the art, the passion and the romance, if you like, to present the whole product.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I have bought records only from the artwork, without even listening to music. And if I have to choose between a white label and a full artwork label, I would always opt for the full artwork. If I have to give away all my test presses or my promo labels, whatever, for full artwork, I would do it.
So what's your favorite piece of vinyl that has the most beautiful artwork? In your many. Collection?
Too many, to be honest. But if I have to choose one, are you familiar with Sorrow by Future Bound on Scana?
Yes, that I...
It's a sign... It's a very simple photo. It's it has a cyanotype effect of a crying eye. An eye with tears. I think that's my favorite from back in the day. There are too many. John Black, for instance, was a guru. He had designed for any label that matters.
That would be actually good to also share.
Yeah.
I can send you a link.
Yeah, please do.
Because maybe a top five or something.
It's. I think there was a part, it was intended to be a single part. I think it goes count to 10, drum and bass, record covers and illustrations, I think was the title. And I had to write also part two. Mm-hmm. For instance, Mark Standier that designed the Photex artwork.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Also features some John Black for Good Looking or Metalheads. Some recent Metalheads artwork as well. Ibsen, who had designed the Intrigue Music records. Too many to mention, but I'll send you the links.
Yeah.
Nice one.
It's a nice little thing to add, I guess.
I think it also triggered, this question was triggered not only because I was talking with Spiros the other day about it, it's also because the 2 days ago, I'm not gonna name, shame, or mention any names, but there was this producer that posted their new album, and it was a collaboration on a major label. And basically you had, it's digital, it's not coming out on vinyl, and you had the two producers with the label logo in the middle. And one of the people on the feed and on the comments said, great artwork. And I was trying to understand what they were referring exactly. Because for me, like Spiros also was just describing and sharing artwork, definition on a vinyl or a tune is actually a very different matter than having the logo of a label and the two collaborators on the
side. That's not really an artwork.
That's not really artwork.
If I may add something to that, yes. I really miss the liner notes.
The
liner notes, the sleeve notes.
The sleeve. Yeah.
Which is, I don't know, a lost art probably, and very few actually do that. They do press releases if you're buying from Bandcamp, for instance. There are some labels that actually go for a presentation and walk the extra mile to make a full presentation of the product, of the record in question.
Yeah, true. What you just said.
Just write a few words about that.
What you just said is actually the right way to maybe conclude on this question, is that not everybody is looking at it as a whole product. Yeah. And it's
no,
exciting.
And to be fair, music is the most important aspect of a record, obviously.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I'm a sucker for artwork and the liner notes for full growth.
You obviously like artwork, but you probably also have a lot of tunes that don't have artwork you like, right? So.
Yeah,
it is. But
this is, I think, a good point, because this is exactly how the music experience has changed over the last like two decades or something. We trends, how do you call it? We moved away from like physical products and always digital now, and that's why also our attention span is a bit shorter, because we're bombarded with all this information every day. And it's a thing I struggle with as well, because we have this promo inbox of drumbase.nl, and it's like, if you don't look at it for a week, there's like 150 or something new releases, and you can't just keep up with all the new, it's just too much.
There's a lot of new music.
About that, you've been in drum and bass like 26 years, you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the music?
He's only 30. How is this possible?
I wish. I think the scene is healthier than ever.
Yeah.
There is everything to accommodate for every taste. Whether you are into atmospheric drum bass or new funk or jump up or whatever subgenre is now.
That's true.
The only problem, if you can call it a problem, is how to filter the supply of music.
Yeah.
For instance, if you are to discover a new artist or a new label, how do you do that? How can they break through?
Yeah, that's a good point.
If they have no promotional tools. For instance, I have blogged about that. I know it's a bit erratic, But nonetheless, I will say it again that at least for me, if you have an attractive logo or an attractive name for an artist or a label, that's a head start. I have made great discoveries by, I don't know, an attractive artist name. For instance, so,
just stood up or?
Yeah.
Again, yeah. It's a bit the visual. We're going back to the visual, whether it is the way. No?
What I'm telling is that if you see a promo, the artist name would be I Am Made, and the track name, This Is Made. Would you even press play? I would not.
Me personally, yes, because I'm this kind of person that I would not let anybody, even if it is for 1 second, I can hear straight away if it is something that I would like to continue.
But if you have
exploring,
to skip through a thousand new releases, then you need something as
Mark
said,
as a
stand
reference.
Out.
Yeah. As a reference,
something
you're
to stand
right.
out. Yeah. You have to filter that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But I also, like Credo said, I used to do that quite as well a lot with the promos. But nowadays, I will most likely listen to all of it. And some artist names that I was also like, what is this? What a strange name. And I listened to it, I'm like, what? Fuck, this is awesome. So, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't say anything. Maybe. I
mean, yeah.
Well, it doesn't, but it is a head start, at least for me.
Yeah, you are right at some point, I think, yeah.
Let's... maybe he had some problems with his battery.
Maybe, I don't know.
I was going to just finish it, actually, and say... I was going to finish it and say...
sorry about that, I had...
No, it's all right.
No problem, no problem, Sweetie. I was telling to the guys that what I would like us to do now is maybe to start finishing off, and I would like to actually. So we are listening to in the background some music that you have also selected for our show, for the drum and bass break on Salto Amsterdam, live until midnight. Spiros is our guest. God is no longer a DJ. You better watch out on this website. And blog, and Spiros, you selected also a very fine selection of tunes for the second hour. Would you like to share some background information about those?
For the second hour, this is an archive mix, actually. It's a podcast we did for Modern Bar Jazz, El Jazz. This is Justice's label. You know, Justice is a good friend and someone that I really owe for helping me when I started the blog. He used to record for Moving Shadow, then Partisan.
Justice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had collaborations with Blame on Moving Shadow. Then he moved on, he made his own label.
They're coming back,
Modern Urban Jazz.
Or less.
What?
Well, that's another topic.
Yeah.
It's Two Bad Mice, actually, Simon and Sean. That are launching this new label Overshadow, and with many former artists of Moving Shadow. I don't think it's a relaunch. It's probably a new project, but with
repositioning
in
the market.
Everyone but Rob Playford, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this is the reference.
Actually, this was a podcast we did for M-Jazz. DJ Singh has mixed that as well.
Pick up DJ Sin.
And it was a selection of music from ambient to drum and bass music I was feeling at the moment. I spent a lot of time to actually compile the playlist. I'm very proud of it, and I would like your input as well, your feedback.
We love it. It's playing on the background, and trademark Morty trademark. Do you guys have another question before I fire off my last question to Spiros?
To be honest, I think I've heard it all. I have questions. So, let's do it.
No, I don't think I have anything. I'm just looking. No.
So to wrap up, the last question for you, Spiros, and thank you for being with us again.
Thank you for having me.
It was a really
It was really enjoyable, to be honest.
Really nice exchange of experiences, ideas, understanding your input, where you're coming from, and where God is no longer a DJ website is actually coming from. Last question is non-DNB related, non-drum and bass related, is work related because of your work. Did you ever want to be a pilot?
Never. Never. I think it's much, much safer down here.
Yeah,
it's a very demanding job.
Just a
reference.
I speak
with pilots every day, and it's a very
exactly.
demanding job.
This is what I wanted to say, to put the listeners also into context.
Well, it's one of the jobs that if you don't love it, you can't do it.
Because Spiros is an air traffic controller. Yeah. Thank you. And this
so be nice to me or expect delays.
Oh, I love that.
So, Spiros, really, thank you. Thank you for your time.
I thank you.
Thank you for featuring in our drum and bass break on Salto Amsterdam. And we would love to hear more from you, more about your website.
Please
and
keep
we would love. Exactly.
Of course, we will be in touch anyway.
Nice one. Thank you so
much. Thank you very
much.
Have a very nice day.
Thank you.
You too.